Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Don't say you never get anything for free. You can get a free 30-day trial of Love Film, the one-stop shop to rent films and games online simply by going to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm. Films and games by post, or you can stream films on your PC, TV, PS3, and now on your iPad. To check the terms and conditions, find out more, and claim your free trial, go to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm now.
Haircut, none of you have noticed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. Lovely to have your ears. We are back, and my name's Marcus, and I've got Luke with me.
All right.
And Jim.
Hello.
But Pete's not here.
No, he's not.
No, he's gone away.
LA.
Is he?
He's changed.
Is that where he's gone, LA? Yeah.
Ruddy Nora. He will be back at some point in
the
near future.
Unless he gets a part in a film.
Well, that's true. He will be back in the near future, so don't you worry about that. But while he's away, we're going to sneakily ask this as the opening question. If you could pick any international team for Pete to play in, who would it be? Jim?
I would have him playing for Norway, because he's from Newcastle, and my geography's quite limited, but I'm pretty sure they're fairly near to each other.
Okay.
So
Scotland?
Not Scotland, no. Don't count Scotland. Them.
Even though you probably could get in the Scotland team based on last week.
Yeah, possibly.
It's
a dig.
Clean
Scotland.
Sheet.
I'd have him play for Norway, because he'd fit right in there, I think. He's just northern, isn't he? It's a very lazy answer.
It is incredibly lazy answer. They're quite tall in Norway, quite a big boy.
Well, there'll be a novelty there then, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
that's true.
They'll love him.
Yeah. So basically, Jim's
they'll love his
Norway
offbeat,
with,
sideways glance at the world.
With no reason.
Yeah.
By the way, not really
you
a feature.
You have a Londoner's geography.
If you're listening to this show for the first time, not really a feature you're going to enjoy.
No. It's not a question you're going to enjoy, is it? To be fair. I mean, come on. I've got limited resources to work with.
Fair enough. Luke, what have you got?
I'm going to go for, and once I say it, you guys are going to agree with me. It's a no-brainer. Mm. It's Japan.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes complete sense.
Because he loves gadgets.
Yeah.
He's into the sort of more, sort of, I suppose, surreal, sort of quirky side.
Yeah.
He loves his football, as they all do.
They'd really take to him.
Yeah, they'd love him. That was my final point. They would love him as well.
I don't know, maybe they think he's a bit square.
No.
I don't think that's possible, is it?
No. Mm.
In Japan, it is.
Incidentally, I was...
Imagine if Japan could enter Eurovision. Off topic, but I like to think
that'd
about
that'd be
this.
Great.
It'd be just amazing.
They should have a guest nation every year.
Yeah, well, they have like Israel and Kazakhstan and places,
and that
don't
nation
they?
Should be Japan.
Exactly.
Every
Get,
year.
Sort it out.
But
Bogan.
I was on the train with a lot of the Japanese Paralympic support team on the way up here, and they're all dressed in their tracksuits. Mizuno. I enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Lovely. Mm. Lovely to see.
Lovely
stuff. Don't see enough of it anymore, Mizuno.
No. I'll tell you what, the Ukrainian football tracksuits, incredible.
Talk us through them then.
Sky blue, but like a shell suit, sort of nylon-y sky blue.
Yeah.
Bits of yellow thrown in.
Yeah.
Bits of a little bit of green on it. It was just an amalgamation.
They got beaten in the sevens side final today by Russia.
Yeah.
If you are listening to the show for the first time, do keep listening, because you'll get a lot more tips on how to be a smash with the ladies such as that one.
So
you've gone to Japan, strong answer. I was thinking two teams. I thought Ghana, because he loves the pot, man.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, really, they could have a proper little double act going there.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine the scrapes they get into, him and the pot man. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Basically, every morning, the pot man would basically go, what have you put in my pot this time? I'm not telling you.
I'm in it, Michelle.
I slept in it.
Yeah, but that would like pot man and Pete.
Yeah, it's good.
Pete and pot man? I think that works better.
Pete and pot man. Mm. Nice smell of sitcom. Or Serbia, because of his haircut.
He does look Eastern European. You said Norway for no reason. You're exempt from this criticism.
I fudged a reason.
You picked an arbitrary country.
Yeah, I picked a northern country.
Yeah.
It's based more on Pete's personality than Serbia.
No, the haircuts.
He looks like
Well, they've got haircuts and Pete has a haircut.
Look, no, but in Serbia they like to shave around the sides of the head.
It's an incredibly racist thing to say.
Have you ever been to, have you ever been to Serbia?
I've been very close.
This is the close you've been talking about it.
That's not true. I've been down there. I've been to Croatia. So
oh, well, there you go. Then you're fully qualified to be making these sweeping statements.
And I've met some before, and they're just exactly like me. Luke's got the point.
Of course,
only just
deserve it.
Just
deserve it.
Me.
No, come on.
Yeah. I was the Usain Bolt of that question. Let's be honest. That's not often I say that. I'm not the fastest mover.
Not Ben Johnson trying to cheat his eye over. Right, so that's established. We can finally move on to what we call the show. Let's go to the internationals, because it's International Week. It's just been and gone. And in Group 8, England won 5-0 away to the mighty Moldova.
Moldova?
Yeah.
Apparently you can buy a house in Moldova for £800.
Mm. Should we get one?
Someone should tell Robbie Fowler. He'd snap them all up.
Loads, yeah.
I know Moldova aren't the best of oppositions, but it's a decent win for England.
Well, yeah, it's good to have such a massive victory, isn't it? It's a confidence boost as much as anything else. I know there's a lot of criticism that Lampard and Gerrard played together, but, you know, still there's Tom Cleverley in there, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain got run out and stuff, you know, it's like... It's good. Obviously, you know, they are mixing up the old with the new. And I mean, some of the James Milner goal was ridiculous. Against like any sort of decent opposition, you're not going to get that many chances to, you know, shirk
pass
responsibility, basically.
I was pleased that Milner's finally got a goal for England. Yeah. I think he's. I mean, with the greatest respect to him, if England produced a lot of good quality players, he probably wouldn't be in the team. But he's a hard worker. He puts himself around for. I remember him putting shifts in the Euros. Yeah.
And nice finish as well.
Yeah, well, and it was a good finish. And I think he deserved it.
He's better than what he was at the Euros. I mean, the way they set up at the Euros was very much zonal, as we say. They like to do. Hodgson likes to do that. And he came in and just thought, right, I've just got to stick to what I know
best.
Well,
yeah, I mean, Milner's sole remit was run the line and cross the ball. You know, I mean, he obviously had a lot more freedom against Moldova. But there was a couple of things where, you know, John Terry gave the ball away quite sloppily at one point. It's like, against a better team, you're going to get punished for that. Theo Walcott as well, a really heavy touch that he managed to win back because of a sort of frightened gazelle of a defender. You're not going to get those chances. But how much
do you reckon that is a concentration issue? They probably wouldn't make, in a weird paradoxical sort of way, they may not make those mistakes because they'll be so switched on against better teams.
I do wonder if that's not actually the case, though, because we do see England making these mistakes in the big games. You know,
yeah,
it's something that's there.
Yeah,
no, I think so.
No, I'm joking.
No. I think you know, Moldova are awful. I mean, they are. It's just the way it is. But they're not the worst team in the group.
And you can only beat what's put in front of you.
And yeah, 5-0 win away from home against anyone is you know, that's a job well done.
Puts us in a great position straight away.
Lovely jubbly. Was it nice to see Gerard Lampard back?
No.
Playing very different roles though than what they would try to.
I've seen people get on people's back about that sort of thing. It is what it is. You've got players in the midfield who would probably start ahead of them, but they're injured. And people like Wilshere, sorry. Wilshere. And whatnot. So it's not ideal. But, I mean, as Jim touched on a little bit a second ago, you've got to... yes, it's good to bring new players through, and I'm pleased that he's calling up younger players, but you can't just do all that in one go. Otherwise, you get a sort of Vierce Boas sort of situation where everything gets changed around too quickly and people don't like it.
Well, of course, at the time of recording, the Ukraine game hasn't been played, but that's a far bigger test.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not much has been said about it, but I think it's a tough group. Montenegro caused us problems in the qualifying for the Euros. Poland, we've seen what they can do in the summer, and Ukraine. Okay, they were both unlucky not to get through their groups, really. Ukraine were decent against England in the Euros. Yeah. Poland had a tough group and were unlucky.
Yeah.
That's three teams who can test us, especially away from home.
Yeah. They're awkward trips away as well. Yeah. We've seen England struggle in games like that, where you've had to really grind out a win.
They've really have got to do that. I mean, I think it's a good start to beat one of the smaller teams in such an emphatic fashion. But as you guys have both touched on, there's no room for sort of concentration issues and stuff like that.
It's a statement.
Well, Poland Montenegro there's some decent goals in that game.
The Montenegro, the first goal was brilliant. Yeah. Incredible team goal.
It was a handy result for England, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that they've got players, in the words of Bobby Robson, that can hurt us. And you've got to be aware of that. We saw that we were at the Montenegro game at Wembley for the Euros, weren't we? And I know we've got a different regime, different manager now, but it wasn't a great performance. And Montenegro showed they could cause us problems.
With Vucinic and Jovetic as well, they've got two absolute quality front men.
Yeah.
This is worrying.
I watched that. I was sat next to Pete that game, and it was 0-0, and England were awful. And in the last minute, Montenegro hit the bar.
Yeah.
I think it was quite a speculative effort, or certainly from distance. Then Pete just went, I wish that went in. was just like, why? And he went, oh, because it's just been amazing seeing their fans running across the pitch to their dugout.
Is he? That's off message. That is off message. Yeah. Well, he's representing Norway now, so he's got no for the actual England.
I thought we decided he was representing Japan.
Oh yeah.
Is that what happened?
Either. Yeah. They're both into whaling. That's what it is.
Pete loves whaling.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Well, speaking of whaling,
I mean, before you move on though, one thing is worth.
That was going to be a seamless link.
Sorry, mate. First time for everything. One of the things you've got to point out is that Hodgson is still undefeated as an England manager. Yeah. I mean, obviously not accounting penalty shootouts, which I don't. So he started off well, you know.
Yes.
Speaking of whaling, let's go to Group 1 where Wales.
Oh, very
nice.
You see? Nice. They were beaten 2-0 by Belgium, a very interesting young Belgium side.
Because they've got the worst manager of all time.
No, Wales do.
Yeah.
No, not Belgium. Yeah. Not Wilmot, surely.
No.
You remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Wales were beaten. They were down to 10 men for a large part of it.
Harshly, I thought.
The man who... Williams referred to as Ginge, I think, in the post-match. Yeah,
I sort of thought it was harsh to start with, but when I saw it a couple more times, it was completely needless.
It was a big one,
and he put a load of aggression into it, and he didn't need to, and he sort of followed through. It could have really hurt the player. I don't think he can have any complaints.
Yeah, it's a good win for Belgium.
Well, what a goal from Vertonghen!
Oh, the free kick.
Absolute just bullet, just incredible.
Yeah, it was absolutely superb strike. A lot has been said about this young.
That would kill a squirrel.
Would it?
Yeah, definitely. If a squirrel got hit with that, dead.
Right.
Who knows? Just saying, that's the sort of power it had in it. Yeah, if he didn't see it.
It's an odd animal to choose. I'd have maybe chosen an owl.
Don't talk about killing owls.
Yeah, a squirrel's weird, but an owl's not.
Yeah.
Well, it's more likely to be sort of perched around a goal, isn't it?
Yeah, but it went really low. Yeah, but move on from owls.
You started with squirrels. It was a good win for Belgium, but there's been a lot said in this young Belgian side, as I was saying moments earlier. I mean, is this their time, golden generation, blah, blah, blah?
Well, they've underachieved for a long, long time. I read something today saying that they had a similar sort of population to Portugal, countries like that. And, yeah, they've been terrible for, as long as I can remember. Since the days of Enzo Schifo. Yeah, and even then, they weren't that good.
Since about 90. 86, they got to the semis, didn't they? 90, they did it. They were decent. They had a good few players. I mean, they're bringing players through now. I think they've got... I've read today, they've got 140 million... pounds worth of players in that squad in terms of transfer fees. That's big, yeah. You know, and if they can get a good manager to sort of,
they've got an excellent spine together. In the side.
Say again, sorry?
We've got an excellent spine.
Yeah, well, yeah. Courtois, it's a highly rated young keeper. They've got Mignolet as well, haven't they?
Yeah. He's also quite bands. Young.
Yeah, obviously Company. Yeah, they've got a decent team, and I think that, you know, Wales, it might be a bit harsh on Wales saying that, you know, that they've got a poor manager. They have. I think they made the wrong, and I know it's difficult circumstances because of what happened with Gary Speed, but it was crying out for someone to come in to keep the regime as it was and try and get as much continuity as possible. Yeah. And I think Coleman, I don't know really how he got the job other than being a sort of reasonably well-respected player for Wales. He's not really done anything.
Wasn't it either him or John Hartson?
Yeah, but I wouldn't have minded seeing someone who got to get the job. I mean, I know...
But John Hartson?
Well, no, I'm not saying him specifically, but maybe a player who's come towards the end of their career who can carry on the continuity... You know,
but those two things aren't necessarily, you know, going to marry up, though, are they? Cause, I mean, Gary Speed and, you know, another are not necessarily going to be able to do the same thing. And Coleman at least has experience.
Yeah, they've lost every game, though, Jim. Every single game so far. You know, I know Belgium is a tough game, and they've got Scotland in their group, and they're maybe realistically they're not looking at qualifying. I don't know, but they've not qualified for a tournament since 1958. You know,
it's a small country.
Of course, but I just think they could have. The talent they've got, and I realise Bellamy Allen and Nick Taylor, I think, was out this game. So they have missed a few key players there. They still should be doing better, I think. And under Coleman, I don't think they're going to improve. I genuinely don't.
I cannot disagree with that.
But well, then, Belgium haven't qualified for a tournament since 2002, I don't think.
That's right.
So, they'd be looking at. They've definitely got a winnable group this time around.
Hazard looked pretty special again.
Oh, he's so decent.
He's absolute class. But with Serbia and Croatia in there, I mean, it's. It's a tricky one.
That is a tough group.
It is a very tough group. Scotland drew 0-0 with Serbia, and the Scots, there was a lot of criticism coming for them. I don't think, I mean, 0-0, I know it's one of those groups where you've got to win your home games, But Serbia are a better side than Scotland, surely.
Yeah, but I think, you know, from a Scottish point of view, it's got to be frustration at the fact that they've been nearly meant so many times. They've got to, they tend to start quite slowly, then build a bit of momentum, look like they're going to qualify, and just cock it up in the last couple of games. And the pattern started again, where they've had a sort of kind of quite mediocre start, I suppose. And, you know, it'd be maddening over and over again to see that happen.
I just think there's such a negative aura around that squad and amongst the sort of Scottish supporting public. I mean, you got, as you just said, you've got to win your home games, right? So that's one thing off the top. Serbia have got their own problems. They're not amazing. They've got some good players, but they're not brilliant. You know, they're not a brilliant team. They're not standout favourites in that group. You know, there's Croatia are decent, Belgium are decent.
Croatia are probably favourites.
But Scotland have got to... I mean, if they're not going to qualify... I mean, let's be honest, you know, with the greatest respect to Scotland, if they don't qualify for a major tournament, it's not the end of the world. No. They'd like to be there, you know, they've got a chance to be there usually, but more often than not, they don't qualify. So it's not the end of the world. So in that by that token, given they've got some good forward players, right, just try. Just set yourselves up at home to win games.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you get undone 3-0, okay, it's disappointing, but it's not the end of the world because you give it a go. And the way Levine sets his teams up, is not only will he set his team up with... Remember against Czech Republic a few couple of years ago? Set his team up with no strikers, you know.
Well, that was the famous example.
Yeah. It's like his personality transfused onto the team. Just very, very dour, very sort of standoffish.
And at the end of the game, he'll sit down there in the press conference and say, oh, it's not the end of the world, we're drawing it. Well, it is the end of the world when you've got, you know, Jordan Rhodes, who admittedly, okay, it's in League One, but he's got about 90 goals the last three seasons. Well, can't get a look in.
The fans, so it's not the end of the world if they don't qualify, but it's the end of the world if they don't try.
If they don't give it a go. Mm. Yeah, you should definitely set up with striker. I mean, Kenny Miller's playing for the Vancouver fucking Whitecaps. You know, he's not schooling international golf for about a year.
Well, Peter Beasley played for them, didn't he not?
Yeah, not in the prime of his career, though.
His whole career was the prime of his career, thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly.
Look about Levine's falling out with Fletcher. Now, there's different reasons to blame different people in that situation, but he's probably their standout striker. He's managed to fall out with him.
Oi.
You've got to play players like Rhodes. You've got to.
Yeah.
I think what they need is to bring a certain Craigie Bruin back.
Yeah, get him back.
Mm. Hey.
There'll be no nothing results with Brown.
Away from in Croatia, there would be. See, Brown was great. Brown could go and get a result in Croatia.
Yeah.
He could get a draw. You know.
I just don't know what Kenny Miller's bringing to the party. He had a decent season at Rangers a couple of years ago, and before that, his only other good seasons have been at Wolves, and that was like 2003. Yeah, get some young players in there.
Well, they had some momentum under McLeish as well, and then obviously he left, didn't he?
I don't know. I think Miller, you know, Scotland are always going to play with one forward, especially away from home. And, well, maybe not at home, as you say, if they set up differently, but I think he leads the line okay. It's just...
But they've been trying the same thing for a very long time, yielding the same results. You know, they've got to mix it up.
Miller's record, whatever way you look at it, and even if you don't want to take the sort of club level point, Miller's goalscoring record for Scotland is poor. It's poor. If you compare it to someone of a smaller nation, or even an equivalent nation, someone like a David Healy or a Robbie Keane, you know.
Robbie Keane, that's...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is he's still playing for a team who aren't that great.
Yeah.
But I think Kenny Miller's record is about 15 goals in about 60 games. It's not amazing. Mm. Yeah, and they play games they should be looking at winning in group stages against minnows. You know, and Scotland are on that level just above minnows. So if you want. All I'm trying to sort of say in a very roundabout, sort of verbose way is that, if you don't set yourself up to win your home games, what's the point? You might as well not even be there. You might as well just not bother doing it.
Hamden, you're accepting that you're making up the numbers.
Yeah.
Really.
Hamden was a bit of a fortress not that long ago when they were pipped by Italy, who beat them 2-1 in the final game in the Group 4 qualification for 2008, was it? I think.
And I can remember them going to France and getting something.
They won. I mean, that was just the epitome of a smash and grab. But when they were in that group, and it was only a few years ago, every home game, they would be like, right, here we are, you'll come to Hampden and we're going to have you. Yeah, I think they beat Ukraine 3-1 in one game. You know, they were brilliant. I mean, McFadden was one of their main men then. But when Italy turned up, you know, Scotland needed a result, and they nearly got it. It was only a last-minute goal, Italy won 2-1. And so not that long ago, Hampden was a fortress, and they need to make it so again.
Oh, and traditionally, they've got a rich history of producing great players. You know, there's no reason they can't have a traditional fortress of a home stadium, as you say, and make it a tough place to go and play. No one likes, people aren't going to want to go to Hampden when there's tens of thousands of you know, really patriotic Scots cheering everything
with,
you know,
Jimmy wigs on.
Oh, exactly. doing the BT. You know. I was just disappointed for Scotland because I've got a few Scottish mates, part of my family's Scottish, and so they should at least give it a go.
Are you saying that to save the Twitter comments?
I want them to do well.
Yeah,
I want them
to do well. Yeah. You know, I know we do take the piss out of Scotland quite a lot, but it's very much light-hearted. You know?
Yeah. I just
Men in Jimmy Wigs sit down.
As a man who supported a club who in the past have set up in this way, yeah. have just set up to not lose football games, it's frustrating.
Yeah, just be more adventurous.
Have a go. And Croatia beat Macedonia at 1-0, so... I think that is a really intriguing group, and all eyes on there. Let's zoom over to Group 6, where Russia beat Northern Ireland 2-0. I mean, it's in Russia. It's not a surprising result. How do we see Northern Ireland doing in this qualification group?
I think it'll be the same old story again. You know, they're just not strong enough, are they? They're not going to compete with a team like Russia, especially away. You know, but obviously that's not where they're looking at picking up points. They've got to look at the other teams in their group. You've got to accept a couple of losses there.
Russia are a good team. You know, England have been to Russia recently. I mean, three or four years ago, and it's really, really struggled to qualify.
Big Fabio Capello in charge.
That just seems weird, doesn't it? I keep forgetting about that because it seems so incongruous.
Did you see? Did you see Roy Carroll when Russia scored their second goal, which is a penalty? The pitch started coming out.
Yeah, what was that?
Basically, it was. It looked to me, I couldn't understand the commentary because I watched it on a feed, but it looked like the turf was just. It might have been recently laid, and massive lengths of turf were coming up.
Yeah,
and Roy Carroll's picking up and showing the ref, going, "What do you want me to do with this?" You know, and he's got a point.
Because,
like,
put it back,
right? Because he's a below average keeper, and these are the help he can get. But when they're taking a penalty, and between the penalty spot and the goal, there's loads of bumps where the turf's come up. It's the last thing you want as a goalkeeper. You know, you want to at least be flat. You know,
he should have set it up though, so that he could have had a few.
Just built a barrier,
like
a sandcastle of grass,
so the penalty tag hit it and it'll fly over the bar.
Yeah,
you know.
He didn't think of that.
Yeah, as you said, a below average keeper. Yeah.
But they were well beaten, and as Jim said, it's not a huge surprise. They're just looking to pick up as many points as possible.
That's almost a practice game, isn't it? It's just seeing what they can get against the much better side, see what they can learn from it to take into the games against the smaller sides.
Under Sanchez, they were decent, weren't they? They're okay. He did a really good job there. They beat England with the David Healy goal.
They beat Spain.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Well, they've turned
Raul's last game for Spain now.
Well, that's it. They've retired Raul, didn't they, from the national side? I mean, yeah, we've talked about Northern Ireland in the past, of course. I mean, it would be great to see them again to do something. But as you say, an away trip to Russia for the vast majority of teams, you know, it's very difficult indeed. Yeah. Well, let's go to Group 3, where the Republic of Ireland had a last minute winner from Doyle in the Kazakhstan. They were 1-0 down, and then Robbie Keane scored a penalty to level it up with just a couple of minutes left, and then Doyle with a lovely close range of volley to win it 2-1 for the Irish.
I didn't see the game, but I take it Trevor Tony set up with like 16 defenders. that was a tricky tie, this one.
It was hilarious though. A real sort of couple of goals in the last few minutes and away they go.
What were you worried about?
Yeah,
that sort of thing, yeah.
Exactly. But Kazakhstan, you're talking of difficult away trips. That's the kind of trip where you need to get like three flights and a boat ride to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if you to get a point there would be poor, I think. I think they're better signed actually than people give them credit for Kazakhstan. I don't think they're dreadful. They're not.
It's not that bad to get there these days, is it? Almaty's not a difficult place to get to, is it?
I just remember when England went there when we won
4-0. Imagine it's just a long flight. Your hotel's a yurt. You know, it's going to be. I judge everything I know about Kazakhstan from Borat.
It's been very geography heavy and bad geography as well this week.
Bad geography is a very nice term for racism.
Yeah.
Or xenophobia, rather. Yeah. That's some bad geography there.
But it was a good win, though. What was it, a good win? It's a win's a win's a win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You've gone away to Kazakhstan, the boys have won. Yeah. Well done, Ireland.
Just stick the 3 points in your pocket and never think of it again.
Yeah.
Let's never speak. I like to think Trevor Tony on the coach on the way back. Let's never speak of this again.
Yeah.
Well done, boys. 3 points. Yeah. Are we going to talk about the performance? No.
Is there a DVD? Definitely not.
They all needed that post-match shower to cleanse themselves.
We're going to watch Gladiator and then go home. Germany beat the Faroe Islands 3-0. Am I the only one who just sort of went,
they should surely have just murdered them.
Yeah.
I don't
normally
think
they win about sort of 33 or something, don't
I
they?
Don't think they were taxing themselves, Marcus.
This is the time probably to bring in this question that's raised its head again that we've talked about.
Well, we answered it at the start.
Quite a lot. No, not that
Pete.
One. No,
oh,
not,
sorry.
Not the big question.
Okay.
And this is a supplementary question.
Okay.
We've talked about this quite a lot in the past, it's distant past, and it's raised its head again. I read it in a couple of papers today.
Yes.
About this notion of a pre-qualifying group. So... And I'm actually all for it. I think, you know, if you have a cut-off point, a sort of arbitrary cut-off point at the world ranking level,
yes.
and you have a pre-qualifying group for the smaller nations, I think it's got a lot of benefits because they actually get to play games where they got a chance of winning.
Yep.
They get a lot of confidence from that. The fans get to see their team actually doing something.
But and also, there's a bit of celebration there because at no point will those fans celebrate unless they score a goal. Mm-hmm. But if you finish top of that group, you know, the likes of San Marino, Andorra, Faroe Islands, Luxembourg, whoever
Scotland.
In there. Easy. Yeah. Come on.
I'm just joking. It's just a little bit of banter.
Well, it's terrible banter.
Oh, yeah.
Those kind of teams. if you win that group, it's an achievement. And then you're in with the big boys, you know. And absolutely, a bit of momentum. The only problem is, for those sides, I mean, you know, where do you put that in the calendar? You know.
Yeah, but I don't imagine they're going to have an awful lot of players who are going to be playing at big clubs anyway, so
yeah.
I don't want to demean the sort of league standard of these nations, but the fact of the matter is they want to contribute at international level, which yeah. I presume they do. It's not helping anyone for Sam Marino to go to Holland and lose 12-0.
Yeah.
No one gets anything out of that.
No.
You know, at the very highest level, it just completely skews stats and all this sort of stuff. It's a waste of time for everyone. You know, you've got players, and I'm a big fan of international football. We know that international football's fallen a little bit behind of club football in terms of importance. But, you know, I side with the clubs on this side. You know, if someone like Spurs have got a run in and they lose, I mean, I know he's left now, but they lose Van der Vaart because he's got to go and play against San Marino. It's a bit yeah. rich, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I suppose the issue is, where do you make that cut off point? Do you do it on rankings or do you do it on, you know, previous record?
I think I'd do it on world rankings. And I think one of the downsides to that, though, would be that they're not going to pick up ranking points because they're going to be playing other poor nations. It'll be tough for them. But I just think it's got to be done. It's a waste of everyone's time. You know, to go away to Moldova, with the greatest respect to Moldova, you know, it's a waste of time to go there. They get spanked 5-0 at home. No one gets anything out of it. The only people who get anything out of it are the fans who get to see some England players playing. You know, it sounds horrendously arrogant to say
but I bet the tickets are well priced as well.
This is
the thing.
Yeah,
I think that would be quite a nice little interesting group if you did have some of those teams, you know. Sky Sports or whatever.
Stick Arsenal in there.
Yeah.
Famous internationals. That is terrible banter, Luke. Come on.
Yeah.
You've let yourself down.
Let's move away from Europe straight away to South America, where they've been qualifying away. And Colombia beat Uruguay 4-0. I think Uruguay were 18 matches unbeaten, something like that. And Colombia hammered them.
Oh, Barranquilla, tough place to go.
Isn't it? Yeah. Especially in that humidity, the eternal summer of Colombia.
Yeah.
It would be great to see Colombia qualify.
I would love it.
We haven't seen them since 98, but more importantly, we haven't seen the Birdman since 98. The Colombian
Birdman.
God,
he'll be sagging now. Do you think the age of him will be represented in the costume? Few more grey feathers in there, a bit paunchy.
No, I reckon it's like the Phantom.
Right. It's like there's loads of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get blooded in.
I'll give you three reasons.
Come on,
you've already given one. The Birdman. Two, Falcao.
Yeah.
He needs to play at a world national.
Say the third.
Big Carlos Valderrama.
Yes! Yeah.
Get him in there in some sort of ambassador
role. Wheel him out.
Well, Higuita was saying he wants to be the coach one day. Imagine him as a goalkeeping coach.
Yeah.
But with Peckerman, though, Argentine Peckerman, like Jose Peckerman.
It's an excellent result for him, it really is.
It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Emphatic win. Yeah, 4-0 over Uruguay.
Yeah.
Uruguay, they've been Copa America champions, you know. And Argentina beat Paraguay 3-1.
See, what I love about this is, was it Fernando Gago that's come out and said, we're too reliant on Messi? And obviously, up until fairly recently, it's like, Messi doesn't produce for the national team. Yeah, Messi's just been like, right, come on then. I'll show you what I've got.
He's got a great free kick as well.
It was a superb free kick. And Argentina are running away with that group, aren't they?
Yeah, well, you found, because, of course, Brazil aren't there. Because they are the hosts. But
Which, weirdly, I think will put them at perhaps at an initial disadvantage, because they're not going to play any competitive football.
Well, you've got this issue about the defending champions always used to qualify automatically, and everyone agreed that wasn't a good thing because they didn't get to play any games. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that might have been one of the things that potentially undid Poland and Ukraine.
I mean, obviously, Brazil have to, they can't, have to qualify. That would be stupid. But, it is a unique circumstance.
They've got their own problems, Brazil. You know, you don't know if Menezes is going to be there much longer, and you don't know who's going to replace him.
Romario's got any say in it.
Yeah, I just don't think, Menezes is obviously not that popular. They're not doing that well. He was tasked with bringing them home the Olympic title. They've not done that.
No.
There's lots of issues around that side as well. So, yeah, I don't think realistically they're going to be anything other than sort of contenders. But
it is quite funny, though, with some of their big players. You know, everyone thought a few years ago, Ronaldinho, blah, blah, blah. Well, he looks as though he's away with the fairies now. But even the likes of Kaká, you know, is he going to be around for it?
I wouldn't think so.
They've got some players, haven't they? They've got some players.
No, they have got some decent players.
But how big would it be for Argentina to win it in Brazil, though?
That'd be huge. For Messi, Bennett, as well, for Messi to get that title, everyone would just... Surely he'd go down as arguably the greatest ever. People are saying that anyway, but that's the one thing hanging over him is that he hasn't won a World Cup yet. Yeah. I really want that to happen. Yeah,
I know Maradona's fallen out with everybody.
Yeah, with the species.
Yeah. And the Argentine FA and blah, 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 blah. But surely, like, he in Brazil giving it some to Pele. Brazil Argentina final. Well, no, we want England doing it, but let's be realistic for a second. Brazil Argentina final.
Those two boxing at half time.
Yeah.
It would be amazing. It would be amazing. Yeah.
Absolute class.
Argentina had a good result, and they won fairly easily, didn't they?
Yeah, they're looking good. They're looking good.
I think, you know, realistically, if you've got I know it's a couple of years away, this World Cup, which means these players are going to mature even more. I mean, you've got a front line of people like Di Maria, Aguero, Tevez, Messi, Higuain. It's just unbelievable. And you want England to do well, and you can see...
I would suggest that Argentina have the best selection of forwards in international football.
Oh, definitely. But we've said this about Argentina before, and they've not delivered, but then they made the boneheaded move of putting Diego Maradona in charge. So, you know, it'd be good to see this side have another crack at it.
Yeah, under Sabaya, who's got them playing well. I would trade in every single England forward in the squad for one pick out of the hat.
definitely.
Yeah.
Any.
Yeah.
Any.
Oh, damn. I've only got... Tevez.
Yeah. Martin Palermo's come out of retirement.
Ludicrous. Still take him.
Tevez. You got the end of the cross.
Let's just name them and then salivate. Tevez.
Yeah.
Aguero. Yeah. Higuain. Lavezzi. Messi. Di Maria. Yeah. Am I forgetting anyone?
Riquelme, not bothered. they're not involved with Riquelme anymore.
I'm sure there are a few, but it's just...
Unbelievable.
Yeah. DeSanto? No.
What, Pastore? Yeah. I know he plays just behind, but he's very much an attacking player.
Yeah. No, I don't rate him.
Do not. Gordon Bennett. Over the weekend, I found out what the South American word is for wags.
Oh, okay.
Botineras.
Have you ever wondered what
going
he's up
out
to?
There?
I am now.
A lot of listeners would probably struggle to picture you researching and a lot of stuff you're sort of looking at. Maybe tirelessly going through goals from Spanish second division games.
Well, I started with that.
Yeah.
That was in the middle of the sheet. And I
picked a couple of pop-ups.
In the top left-hand corner, we had England and Moldova. It was in said and done, I saw that there was a club in Paraguay. Their president said he's had enough of these botineras. We mentioned Paraguay, and I thought, well, here we go. And
the botinera is the word. There's a Spanish word for wag, is it?
Botinera, yeah.
Yeah, okay,
I say Spanish. I think it's more of a Latin American term.
Okay, right.
But it is Spanish, of course. And he said he's worried about this, you know. And he's saying to his young players, "This is serious. These botineras lurk outside, sapping my boys' focus."
It's a euphemism. Will you come?
I'm so focused.
Hey, lady, come and sap my focus later.
I pay my players for their footballing ability, not their erotic capacity. And the striker of this particular Paraguayan side said, "This news has made us sad."
Oh, great stuff.
Unfocused young man, no doubt. Right, well, that's a kind of the international roundup over there. Let's go
Sorry about the geography.
Yeah.
Sorry about
the bad geography.
Let's go back to club football. And Richard Scudamore has had a meeting with the clubs of the Premier League talking about salary caps and financial fair play. That must have been a short meeting. But what do you think of a salary cap in the Premier League?
Well, is it legal? Because this issue's come up quite a lot, and I'm not sure you can actually impose that under EU law.
Meanwhile, turkeys didn't vote for Christmas for another year.
Well, Arsenal and Manchester United have said they want it.
The clubs haven't got any money.
That's right.
Want it.
Well, no, but a lot of people are saying basically that, but because Manchester United and Arsenal turn a hell of a lot of profit in terms of shirt sales
and stadium sales, it looks
quite noble, but it isn't necessarily. Where obviously, you know, City and Chelsea and clubs like that, they want it. I mean, the thing is
with the idea of a salary cap, there are so many ways around that. You say, well, he's earning say 80 grand a week. But they've paid for his house, they've paid for this, they've paid for that. It's just
the issue is that it's there's about to be a lot more money coming in, isn't there? Because there's a renewed TV deal.
That's right,
so the clubs are worried that it's all going to get soaked up by wages. I forget which chairman it was. It said that we're going to have the same players to pick from. Paying them more isn't going to make them better, and that makes perfect sense. So I really hope we don't see that spike. I mean, some of the percentages of the club's turnovers that they're spending on wages is ridiculous. It's like, I think it might have been Wigan that was 70% of their turnover.
Well, QPR's 180% or something at the moment.
QPR.
The Man City Chelsea thing is a bit of a red herring anyway, because I'm pretty sure they only need 14 out of the 20 chairmen to agree on it.
Yeah,
so
if
as long as 14 vote
but
for
But there's
it.
A lot of clubs that have rich owners, and they're going to be aiming to get to a point where they can sugar daddy their club, surely. So voting against that, surely.
But is the large point not that surely it's going to be a case of if they do it in the Premier League, the players just move overseas?
Yeah.
So whenever I've been asked,
but will they though? There's not that much money knocking around elsewhere.
It depends how high the cap's set.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll still earn a healthy living.
You've got a realistic chance of places like Russia and China becoming a lot more prevalent for big players to go to. Whenever I've been asked about it before, about salary caps and stuff, I've always thought it's anywhere.
Many people ask that.
South America as well, by the way. They've got a lot of money knocking about Brazil. Now.
So well, Clarence Seedorf's got most of it.
Yeah, British players aren't going to go there. Well, that'd be amazing, though.
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised how look what happened with a lot of English players when the English clubs had the European club ban. They couldn't play in European competition. A lot of them went to Scotland, but people went overseas then. You've got to look at it as almost like a worldwide thing. The game's a global game now, so it needs to be extended worldwide, and that's so difficult. I mean, even just to extend it Europe wide would be tough. But I mean, as you just sort of alluded to, like some clubs in Spain. I mean, you've got clubs in the Segunda division in Spain. They've not paid their players for months and months.
Yeah.
It's getting to the point now. A lot of them are going to breach a contract and just be available for free because the economy is so bad. So in a way, you are right in a sense that maybe the Premier League is the best place for them to be because it's got so much money washing around it. But if they impose a salary cap, it almost means they cut their own throat because the league becomes not as marketable because there's not as many big players there. It almost signals a downward spiral of their product. So it's a bit of more of a difficult issue than that.
Taking away from that that issue that we all know will be an elephant in the room, do you think maybe the Premier League needs it though? Because it's becoming bloated, isn't it? It's becoming quite obscene when you look at the way teams are just throwing cash cash around to get the best players. And we're in a cycle where English teams are doing very, very well in Europe. That will come to an end at some point. This could be the thing that makes that happen. But do you think maybe we do need it to sort of freshen it up and make it less good? It's becoming vaguely grotesque.
It is, and I think. But if Platini's fair play rules, when they come in, the clubs are going to have to save somewhere.
I think there's plenty of clubs who aren't really taking that seriously.
No, I think that's
there'd
right.
But a lot of loopholes.
It just depends what UEFA do and if they really put that into place.
It's going to be a real test for UEFA.
And
if the first big clubs are breach it, because there'll be some of them that just don't make the cut-off point.
Of course. Well, it will be, and it'll be
challenged, won't it? It'll be
UEFA versus the big clubs, and who has the more power? It'll be an interesting battle.
The only way UEFA will be able to punish them is by kicking them out of competition, and again, they're cutting their own throats.
Yeah,
clubs
but are UEFA, in a couple of years' time, really going to kick out Manchester City, Barcelona, Real Madrid, from Milan, from the Champions League?
Portsmouth, potentially.
Well, I did say in a few years, fair enough.
There's no way Portsmouth are going to be living within their means by then.
No, exactly right. Yeah. Portsmouth haven't lived within their means, they didn't even make it to the Champions League.
Poor old Pompey. They did win 3-0 though, didn't they?
What a game. Game
away, away from home.
Game of the weekend. Genuinely one of the worst refereeing performances I've ever seen at any level.
Beat Crawley Town though, and you ate them. That must have been a nice silver lining.
We all ate them, don't we? Come on.
I don't know. Creepy Crawley.
You boys are too scared to say what you think.
I just want to coax it out of you.
I think that
direct your comments.
One thing I have to say about Crawley is I'm pretty sure their two central midfield players made four fouls and got four yellow cards. It was outrageous. I mean, the Hope Akpan, who got sent off, it was arguable that he should have gone. But the referee, the classic refereeing thing, which we've all seen before, he got his cards out early.
First challenge, yellow. Silly.
And then there's nothing he could do.
Very, very silly. Very, very silly. Well, back in the Premier League, Michael Owen has signed for a team, and it's Stoke City. And he's going to be teaming up with Peter Crouch again.
Ooh, knockdown central.
I got in trouble for saying they're going to be the new Quinn and Phillips.
Did you?
Apparently that was disrespectful.
What? Yeah. It's massively disrespectful.
Yeah, sorry.
And if you don't understand why, then then you're probably a normal bloke. Peter Crouch said, if Michael stays fit, he will score. If he's playing regularly for Stoke and scoring the Premier League, I don't see why he can't force his way into the England setup. Jim? Yep. But it is good to see Michael Owen employed.
I just wish he'd play.
Yeah, well, this is it, isn't he? Because there's always something, oh, he's not quite fit, or, you know, the managers just seem to have lost faith in him, as was the case with Ferguson. You know, I want to see him starting every game where possible. He's got to be getting in ahead of Cameron Jerome. If he's not, he's over.
I'd love a couple of good years left in Owen.
I want his career to end with some credibility.
Yeah.
I don't want this damp squib to happen.
Because he was fantastic back in the day.
Yeah.
He really was, and it's one of those unfortunate.
He's like 32 as well.
Exactly, yeah. And people have forgotten that, and it is a shame. In Manchester, Maicon has moved to Man City. Mika Richards, is that?
Yeah,
the end
I did
of
not
him?
See that one coming.
Yeah,
but I mean, Maicon's, you know, his best days are behind him. That's a strange one. Perhaps he's actually going there as backup for Richards.
Well, yeah,
he's named after Michael Douglas.
Mm.
So, on the basis of that, he's worth signing.
Get on that.
Yeah, indeed.
Greed is good.
Yeah.
Let's go down a few divisions where Harry Redknapp, he's back in football in an advisory role at one of his old clubs.
Yeah, win.
Bournemouth.
That's how he started off at Portsmouth as an advisory role.
Is that right?
He moved to director of football.
Yeah.
And then he became manager.
Yeah.
Isn't that an advisory role?
Then he won the FA Cup, and that's where the story ends.
Yeah, that, if there was a film made of Paulson.
Yeah, that'd be it. In Hollywood, that's it, yeah. Yeah.
The last shot would be...
A Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah. The last shot would be of Kanu with that King Kanu cap on, holding the cup, and it's still end credits.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well,
who would play Harry?
Oh...
Big Liam Neeson, maybe?
Ray Winston.
Maybe the bloke that played Bricktop in Snatch.
Oh, yeah. If he's a bit old now.
No, he's... No, I don't think so.
It'd be Ray Winston, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. You're not happy with that, Jim?
No, like. I don't think it's a good casting.
Why? Because Ray Winston's quite good.
He's too big, isn't he? He's too burly.
Winston's good on camera.
You could rest safe in the knowledge that it will never happen. It will simply never happen.
Listeners,
it'll be funded by Sky Sports News.
Let's get the listeners involved. Tweet us or email us. Who would you like to see in the cast of Pompey the Movie, directed by Guy Ritchie?
Yeah,
so get on that.
Yeah. I look forward to that.
Direct it all to Luke.
Mm. Right, look, we spoke about Joey Barton last week. Obviously went to Marseille, but unfortunately for Joey, he's going to have to serve the remainder of his 12-match ban.
It's not unfortunate.
Just get on with it, Joey. Yeah. You did it.
Yeah, it's not unfortunate, is it? Unfortunately for Joey, he's going to have to pay the time for a horrendous crime.
Has he not learned that actions have consequences by now? You can't run away from a ban from something. It's a concept.
What a sweet hooligan. Yeah. He can play in the Europa League.
Because nobody cares about the Europa League.
Do they not? Poor old Joey. Just a little update on him there, in case you hadn't seen it. One of the other stories last week we spoke about in Spain was Cristiano Ronaldo. He's a little bit unhappy at the moment. Well, apparently, we found out what he's bothered by.
Yeah, this was confusing
to me. This is unbelievable.
Because it seemed to say, the story I read anyway, seemed to say that he's annoyed because he doesn't seem to be universally loved by Real Madrid fans, but at the same time, he's fed up of getting mobbed by Real Madrid fans.
Yes. Mm.
So which is it?
Is that an angry mob?
Yeah.
I would reckon so, yeah. Well, there's loads
no,
of...
No, no, it's not. I know what you mean. Apparently, he can't go to his favourite restaurant anymore.
Yes, he has to
get it.
There was also loads of stuff saying he didn't feel the club was supporting him in terms of, you know, like really backing him to win the Ballon d'Or over players like Messi and Iniesta. I mean, we spoke about this last week and said that it's a ridiculous notion that he'd be worried about things like that, but reports are now coming out saying that is the case. But Jim, it's Real Madrid, so you take everything that comes out of there with a pinch of salt. But, yeah. I mean, what can they do?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They can't make them, you know, decide it's Ronaldo.
A few backhanders, maybe.
Allegedly.
We can pay for that.
I said maybe.
That doesn't
definitely
go on.
Maybe.
That
he earns something like $21,000 a day, doesn't he?
Apparently he earns a day what the average wage for a Spaniard in a year is.
That's right. And the article also said this.
Why don't
like
they love the
million,
man?
Because he doesn't love himself.
Mm.
Or maybe
not
he does.
Not sure about that.
Well, according to Wayne Rooney's book, he said, in the time I've been playing with Ronnie, I don't like that.
No.
Ronnie.
It's easier for him to spell.
Yeah, that's true. The one thing I've noticed about him is he can't walk past his reflection without admiring it, even if we're about to play a game of football. If there's one person with a bigger self-belief than Ronaldo, I haven't met him yet.
Be a nice problem to have, wouldn't it, Wayne?
Zlatan?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, but he might not have met him yet.
He's met Zlatan. He's played against him. Well, Zlatan's got a bigger self-belief than anyone.
Absolutely.
Well, we got a bit of Zlatan news. He was because he's been compared to Cristiano Ronaldo, hasn't he, recently?
I love that.
Yeah. Well, no, I say compared. There's been comparisons drawn on his lack of goal celebrations with PSG, and he said, "I see you. Now you're trying to compare me to someone else. You cannot compare myself to him," Zlatan said. And the big Swede's been honoured by local authorities in Malmo's hometown, where he is with the Swedish national side currently, and he's been given a place on the Walk of Fame outside the Malmo Stadium. And he said, "We usually say that you cannot become a legend before death, but I am a living legend, at least in Malmo." I like that, though. There's a little...
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's really humble, isn't it?
It's Latin, though.
No, that's
at
not
enough.
At
least in Malmo, he's saying...
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Never change. Never change.
And quickly before we go to correspondence, we've got to say that Alessandro Del Piero's gone to Sydney.
Brilliant.
He said, "For the next 2 years, I am Australian." That's not how it works, and I sincerely hope.
Well, it's pretty method.
Yeah, it's very. Yeah.
Didn't realise you had method footballers. He's been at the same club for ages, so we never had a chance to know, did we? More players should do that. They should adopt
Didi
the sort
Harman
of style
with his accent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think Liverpool should have moved heaven and earth for Del Piero. I really do.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he himself said he was really surprised when they came in for him.
I wish I'd have got him.
And then he could have been scout for the next couple of years. Yeah. That would have been fun. Delicious. Noel Gallagher would have hated that.
He would have done.
Yeah, he would have, yeah.
Maybe that's why he didn't go.
Yeah, put him on. Yeah,
I bet he was. I bet Gallagher threw him off.
He went on to say, "In Del Piero, in Australia, I will be able to deepen my passion for rugby." Strange.
Method. He's getting into it straight away.
Do you not remember the Christian Vieri yacht? It was obviously half Australian.
Yeah, that's great.
He's massively into his cricket, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I remember seeing something on Gazzetta Football Italia way back in the day, where they would have a player on and they'd ask him their heroes and stuff. And I think they had like Vialli on there, and he said, Syria, whatever. Yeah, they had this football. And I asked Vieri, and he said, Alan Border. Opening bats for Australia. But I had no idea why at the time.
So
Christian Vieri was on one of the, I forget the name it was, old BBC programme. John Inverdale used to present. And he did, because English is, he grew up speaking English and Italian, but he speaks English like an Aussie. But as a football fan, you only know him playing in Serie A.
Yeah.
Or one or two of the other leagues, and playing for the Italian national side. And to see the big man sitting back with an Aussie accent speaking English is just glorious.
Yeah.
Absolutely glorious. Before we do that, sorry, one more Italian we've got to give you a little update on. It's Pippo Inzaghi. He's taken charge of the Milan youth team.
Great stuff.
Indeed it is. And the first game of the season is coming up, and he said, "I am calm and peaceful about this new experience. I have prepared for this by studying the opponents and picking the team that I thought was most useful."
That's a textbook approach.
He's got to grips with this very quickly, isn't he?
Yeah.
Imagine his training regimes. It's going to be 10 men in the box. Just waiting for rebounds.
Yeah. Just a massive go and knock out Wembley.
It's all going to take place in one penalty area.
With no offsides.
Yeah.
No offside.
Absolute class. Right.
Before you go on, I need to give you, you'll forgive me for this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I've got to give you a big John Parkin update.
Oh, ooh. Right. Well, absolutely.
The beast.
The running order's out the window. It's all on you.
Yeah, there's no running here.
In a magnificent seaside derby at the weekend, Morecambe 0, Fleetwood Town 4.
Tell me.
Big John the Beast scored a hat trick and set the other one up as well.
Nice. Oh, look at, he found his new level.
Yeah. Great stuff. Good to see.
Yeah.
I'll take him at Pompey like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liverpool, man.
It's not going to happen. We can't afford to pay him.
Class.
Right.
Absolute class. Right. I think it's time for some correspondence.
I think we've got emails this week. We're not doing tweets. Just doing emails. Should I do one first?
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah, this first one's from George Young, who is evidently a Scunthorpe fan. You can still find him.
Yeah.
He says, a few seasons back, Ramblers, about 2005, Scunthorpe visited the Priestfield Stadium. And Gillingham's man on the mic was a roving reporter who was chatting to fans at both ends before the game. This is obviously
an announcer.
Yeah, it's an announcer. Sorry. So far, so ordinary, he says. But then early in the second half, the PA crackled into life and the following phrase was uttered. "It doesn't matter how big your banana is." He says, 7 years on, it's the only thing I can remember from the game. I have no idea if this is a regular comment in the Medway towns or if it involved a member of the youth team in the groundsman's shed.
Yeah.
Allegedly. I certainly hope not, George.
Yeah.
He said, "There only something this interesting could happen in a Scunthorpe game this season. We've got our fingers crossed for you, Mr. Young."
Class. Jim.
Yes. Even all. That's from the email, not from myself. Yeah. Does anyone remember the Football League during its Ensley Insurance-sponsored phase holding pitchside races to find the quickest player across the divisions in the early 90s?
Yes!
I seem to recall it fairly vividly. But can find no record of it when searching the internet, and have memories of the likes of Ken Charlery haring down the touchline against another speedster. The races, as I remember them, were held between two players at a time during the warm-up period before a game, with each team putting one player forward at the start of the season in a battle to find the quickest. Does anyone else recollect seeing this? Please reassure me that I'm not going completely mad. That's from Kyle in Market Harbour.
Yeah, I vaguely remember something along
this
line. I think it may well have been. I don't think it was Ensley Insurance. I thought it was Coca-Cola, but I might be a bit wrong in terms of the timing on that. But I certainly remember something like that happening. And if anyone can shed any further light on that, I'd be interested.
Do you think clubs stop doing it because players get injured in warm-ups doing stuff like that? And if you're exerting yourself like that without having properly warmed up,
because it's completely pointless.
Yeah, it's utterly, utterly needless.
Yeah. Running races.
I might not do it, Gaffer, because I've got to play a game in a minute.
Yeah.
Running races before the game.
Yeah, anyway, get your emails into show@thefootballramble.com.
Indeed. Oh, talking of announcers, I've been working at the Paralympics recently.
You have?
And I've been working very closely to a chap called Pete, who's QPR's announcer.
Good lad, is he? Good egg.
Magnificent man.
Yeah.
And not one mistake in sight.
He was slagging you off, so.
Yeah. Well, the mics was off. So. Oh, dear. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time.
Woo!
And, it's the man who is the most capped England player of all time. It's Peter...
Robert Lee.
It's Peter Leslie Shilton.
Oh, good stuff.
Huge.
Huge. Indeed. Now, before we start, we've got to get the most important thing out of the way. He was born on the 18th of September 1949.
Oh, 2 days before my birthday and 18 years before the Summer of Love.
Nailed that one, mate. Well done.
Yeah, nice one, pal. Great stuff. According to the FA, he has played 1,390 times for 11 clubs during his career.
It's decent.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
Pete hasn't even done that on computer games.
Yeah.
Played well into his 40s and is England's most capped player of all time. 125 England appearances in a 20-year career. That tally would have been more if it wasn't for Ray Clemens, you know. Mm. But we will come on to that. Now, at a young age, he was playing schoolboy level with Leicester City.
Age to do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Get it out of the way?
Yeah.
It's just a bit weird otherwise,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, you don't want to be playing schoolboy at, you know, the tail end of your career. It shows it's not panned out.
No, exactly, yeah.
He represented Leicester Schools as a goalkeeper in midfield and up front. He said he liked playing up front the most, but clearly his talents were where in between the sticks. And Shilton did say, though, that the experience of playing as a striker helped him playing as a goalkeeper. He said, "I learned how a centre-forward thought, and when you play in goal, you have to read what the forwards are going to do, so it was all good experience."
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked about this before, about how in Holland they play a certain number of months in each different position as they're growing up. Gives them a bit of a sort of further understanding of how their colleagues are playing and that sort of thing. Makes perfect sense, really.
Perfect sense. When he was young, he went on a trip with the boys' club to Hamburg. And it's where that...
Sorry, mate.
That's all right. It's where he got his first pair of proper goalkeeping gloves. Because obviously back in the day it was...
Are we going to do it all in this much detail? Because this is going to take days.
I can't wait to find out when he got his first socks.
I skipped over that.
Yeah. Oh, bit of a shame.
Matching socks. He said, "We used to have to buy gardening gloves and things like that to give us grip on the ball."
Yeah, because, I mean, the goalkeepers obviously didn't wear gloves till a certain time.
Yeah. Well, that's right, yeah. Or spitting in your bare hands and then you're away, you know. And he said,
"What difference does that really make?"
Yeah, you used to see it happen quite a lot. If you watch videos of back in the day before goalkeepers wore gloves, they always spit on their hands. Well, that's just to clean them.
One of the guys I was working with on the Paralympics, he was Pat Jennings' number two at Arsenal for years.
Right,
and he just said that's what you do if you spit on your hands and you're away. And if it was a bit cold, you know, a little pair of woolen gloves. Just unbelievable, isn't it? So Shilton,
of course, balls are made of concrete back then as well.
That's true, yeah.
Exactly.
So Shilton bought a pair of, he said, leather-made gloves with pimples on, and they were fitted and everything. He was well pleased, and they cost a lot of money. But he got home, though, he said, "I tried them out in the dry, and they weren't too bad. The next day I went out in the rain, and the first shot came to me, and it went through my hands like a bar of soap." Just like, oh, for crying out loud. So he binned them straight after that. In 1966, 16-year-old Shilton made his debut with Leicester City. Gordon Banks was first choice at the time at Leicester City. Imagine having those two on the books. Incredible. And Shilton, of course, eventually took the number one shirt from Banks.
Because of Banks' eye injury, wasn't it?
Well, I think Banks had moved on. But yeah, Banks...
the England thing, it was because of...
England thing.
Wasn't Shilton quite cocky as well about his own talent when he was quite young?
Was he?
Okay. Yeah, I thought he'd given like an ultimatum to the club or something like that. You play me or Gordon Banks when he was really, really young.
Right.
And they eventually actually did go with Shilton.
Yeah, well, he...
that's how he got you on the round, was you, isn't it?
Exactly.
You play me or... Well, that's it. And
to a chimpo.
Well, him and Leicester City reached the FA Cup final when he was just 19, and he became one of the goalkeepers, youngest goalkeepers ever.
Have that, Banks.
Playing an FA Cup final. They lost, though. They lost.
Did they?
Have that. Shilton.
And the same year they were relegated.
It gets worse. It's not a laughing matter, it's his profile. We don't want to laugh
profile,
at his
but they went back up to the top division soon after, and he played a big part.
Did he get punched in the lay by?
Shut up! He scored a goal for Leicester when clearing the ball up the pitch against Southampton once.
Against who?
Southampton.
Get in there.
The only goal of his career as a goalkeeper.
Empty seats. Tragedy.
That's true. He made his England debut under Alf Ramsey in 1970 against East Germany, and his last appearance would be 20 years later in 1990. Different class. Later Gordon Banks was number one, and Shilts was number two when he first took over. First started. But as we said, Banks had the car crash, and it was his eye, wasn't it?
Yeah, some sort of eye injury, which meant his perception was ruined, so he couldn't play anymore, which is a real shame.
And throughout the 70s, Ray Clements and Peter Shilton would kind of battle it out, but it was often rotated, the number one jersey, between the two.
It was a real problem, because no one could make a decision on it.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it's so strange. Such instability in that kind of position, it's ridiculous.
It's so strange. And you think, he got 125 caps, how many more would he have had?
Yeah.
I think they should have gone with Shilton, and Brian Clough certainly thought that, because he said Shilton was head and shoulders above Clements in every aspect of goalkeeping. It was one of the biggest insults to Shilton to alternate between the two.
Get on.
Alternate. That's a great word. It's like alternate and rotate.
Sorry. For
get off the fence, Clough. I'm fed up with this. Flip-flopping around.
But in 1974, he moved to Stoke City, and he was there for 3 years until he moved to Nottingham Forest.
In 73, did he not...
that was the mistake in quality.
Yeah, was he not playing in the game where the famous Polish keeper kept England out? And he let a goal in, didn't he?
Well, they were lost 2-0, I think.
I love that his time at Stoke City got as much attention as when he bought his first pair of gloves.
Well, OK, Jim, well, tell us. What did he get up to at Stoke City?
Save some shots.
Yeah, save some shots. Yeah.
Did some goal kicks.
Yep, shouted at his defence, organised the back line, spat in his hands.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. And so after that, he then went to Nottingham Forest under Brian Clough.
Yes.
Clough. Easily the most successful period of Shilton's career. They won the First Division in his first season, and many will remember that incredible save he made.
Never won the Premier League, though, did he?
That's true. That incredible save on the last day of the season against Coventry. They drew 0-0, and they needed that to clinch the title. That is that save where the ball's crossed over, and it's a very powerful header, like from about, I don't know, 8 yards out or something like that. And Shilton's kind of, he's not in the centre of his goal, is he? He moves across and tips it over the bar.
Yeah.
It is different class.
Yeah.
Absolutely different class. He won the league. And in that year, he also won the PFA Player of the Year award, and he conceded. He let in 18 goals in 37 league appearances that season.
Was that not a record?
Quite possibly.
Until Chelsea under Mourinho, and then because he was 15.
Yeah.
I may have made that up, but I'm sure it was. I think it might.
It's impressive, nonetheless.
Yeah, I'm not taking anything away from the lad.
1979, Forest won the European Cup, beating Malmo 1-0 in Munich.
Yes, they did.
And then they defended their crown the following season with a great performance from Big Schultz against Hamburg. Yeah, in Madrid. So he kept two clean sheets in European Cup finals.
Can't argue with that. You literally can't argue with that.
He left Forest in 82 and he joined Southampton. But during the 80s, he became England's number one goalkeeper with Bobby Robson at the helm. Robson loved Shilton. Absolutely loved him. World Cup 82, World Cup 86 saw a lot of Big Shilts. And of course, he was involved in a moment or two with Diego Maradona.
Yes. He basically got outjumped by 5'6" Diego Maradona. which wasn't the great.
I know Maradona cheated,
and I understand that.
But yeah, Shilton didn't jump very high.
Shilton still should have got there.
Yeah, he should have got there.
But let's not forget, Shilton can legally use his hands.
Yeah, yeah. So he won't have been expecting that.
Well, no, Maradona did. It was a 60-40 or something in Maradona's favour. It wasn't a 50-50.
Shilton should have been quick off his line, in my view.
Yeah.
But he's never going to get hassle for that because of the way Maradona acted. So I understand that.
Well, had Maradona not cheated, he would have got the ball.
Yes. Yeah, that's
yeah.
fair.
Yeah, fair oh. enough. Yeah, fair enough.
He was excellent goalkeeper for England. Come on.
No,
yeah,
no one's saying he wasn't.
No, of course he was, yeah.
Well, you know.
Except maybe Ray Clements.
Yeah.
In 1989, he broke Bobby Moore's record of 108 England caps.
Rude.
And by this time, he was playing for Derby County. And then he went into the 1990 World Cup as England's number one at the age of 40. Clean sheets against Holland, Egypt and Belgium on the way to the semi-final.
Yeah, he basically had a really good tournament to start with. He was so solid. And then he sort of was solid enough against Germany. West Germany, sorry. He didn't get anywhere near any of the penalties in the penalty shootout. There was talk that they should have brought Besnett on for the penalty shootout. Mm. But back in those days, you couldn't pick any player from the squad. You had to name your reserve keeper. And Robson already named the other keeper, so Bezel
was Chris Woods, yeah. wasn't it?
So Bezel wasn't eligible anyway, and so he couldn't have come in.
Wonder if that story's true. That sounds like it.
No,
might
it's not. It is. I've heard it be repeated by a number of different people, and it's also in Pete Davis's book as well, which is excellent. But also in the third place playoff, he was poor, which is a shame. It's a bit of a
his last game.
A sad way for him to go out of it because he gave away. Well, it wasn't given as a penalty, but Italy scored anyway.
Yeah.
When he brought Baggio down the area, and then obviously he didn't get anywhere near Scalacci's penalty anyway.
But a fantastic England career.
Oh, but listen,
and he was so. I mean, if you look at some of the stats that he has for England,
I think that I was going to say because of my age, I only really got to know him as a goalkeeper from World Cup '90 onwards, and he was decent enough, but he wasn't amazing, especially in the latter stages. So my sort of opinion of him was a bit coloured for ages until I sort of went back and looked because he had an amazing career.
He was 40.
My very early memories of football involved Peter Shilton being this almost mythical figure, keeper of the gates. You know, like you could not get past.
Mm. I mean, arguably the greatest goalkeeper England have ever produced. I mean, yeah, I know there's a few.
It's probably
between
him and Banks, isn't it? And maybe Paul Robinson.
Paul Robinson was decent for a bit. He was decent for a bit.
He's not
I'm not having you caning him, though. It's the worst one you could pick.
You've caned Paul Robinson on this very show many a time.
True, yeah.
Not in the profile. he kept 65 clean sheets for England.
Can't believe you haven't mentioned his year at Leyton Orient.
He's coming to that.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Hellfire, he's only 40 at this stage. Right.
Yeah. We've still got to get through his first pair of old man trousers, you know.
Pipe.
65 clean sheets for England,
yeah.
And only conceded 80 goals in 125 matches.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. That's why he's in there.
But he was a fantastic goalkeeper all round, a great shot stopper, but solid.
Big presence as
well.
Yeah,
that's right. He did all the attributes.
He organised his defence very well.
Yeah. So he finished playing for England, of course, after 1990, and left Derby County in the early 90s and took up a player-manager role at Plymouth Argyle. And he was there for a few seasons, and to be honest, he was quite successful. I mean, he changed the team around. When he joined, they were in the lowest scorers in all four divisions. And in his second season, they finished third in the league, and they were the highest scorers in all four divisions.
It's not bad, is it? You don't hear that many goalkeepers becoming managers, so...
No.
Yeah, that's true. He brought in three players who scored 65 goals between them, apparently. Unfortunately, they lost in the playoffs, and they obviously didn't go up. And then he kind of fell out with the chairman. He had some personal problems and whatnot, and... He kind of fell away and he was moved on from his time at Plymouth. And he kind of regrets that a bit because he kind of enjoyed management and so on and so forth. And then after that in Plymouth, he realised that he was only a few games off the 1,000 league games mark. So he thought, I've got to get over the line.
It's weird how people want to get to an even number.
Yeah, that's it. So
it's a big landmark, isn't it? Yeah. 1,000, bloody hell.
At 46, he joined Leyton Orient.
Yeah.
46.
Yeah.
And he sat on a few benches of a few bigger clubs actually before that, but in 96 he joined Leyton Orient. And I think
he went through a little sort of Gil from The Simpsons kind of phase. Yeah. Just sort of going around different clubs really hoping to get a game.
In leather trousers.
Really needed it.
Crisis.
Yeah.
on a motorbike.
Yeah. Come on, for yeah. all shilts.
You kids love
I can get a game.
You kids love clean sheets, don't you? I watched his 1,000th game yeah. for Leighton Orient. I can't remember who they played.
He played 1,000 games for Leighton Orient. That's 46.
Yeah, that was unreported.
Like he would have been, that's a shame. He would have been about 4 games off 2,000.
Yeah, I know. But sometimes you just got to know when to quit, Jim. Mm. I did see his 1,000th league game, which yeah. happened to be for Leighton Orient. Yeah. And they won 2-0, but it was quality because every time the ball came near the goal, he clearly wanted to clean. Well, obviously wanted a clean sheet, but yeah. it would have been nice to get a clean sheet on the 1,000th. And every time the ball came near the goal, and it's obviously a small stadium, and the Sky Sports cameras were there, they were picking up the sounds, and every time the ball came near him, away! Away! Yeah. Every time, yeah. away!
Get rid!
Yeah, I'm so old! Don't let this anywhere near me! I'm going to do myself a mischief! I should not be here!
I should be here, to be honest. Get rid of it!
I want to go to bed! Oi, 125 England caps. Yeah. You bastard.
Yeah.
He retired from professional football age 47.
Yeah.
That is an incredible achievement.
That's brilliant.
It really is. He kept a clean sheet in the Football League.
It's Burridge-esque.
It is. He's now an after dinner speaker, and he was even on Strictly Come Dancing.
He was, I remember that. Mm.
Yeah. But we'll end with a quote from Sir Bobby Robson. What can you say about Peter Shilton? Peter Shilton is Peter Shilton. It's not even finished. And he has been Peter Shilton since the year dot. And he comes in and deal with that sort of thing.
That's excellent, man. What a finish. Bobby.
Peter's your lady, man.
What, Bob? You got to love Bobby, haven't you?
You can't, you can't not. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen, for another football ramble. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble, and the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yeah.
All true.
Loads of stuff going on. You know the drills. Get involved. Oh, don't forget, by the way, you should go to footballramble.com/lovefilm because you can get a 3-month trial with no obligation. It's a good deal. You heard about it at the top of the show. And also, you'll be given doing us a favour too. So,
and there's a great article on the road. There's loads of great articles, but there's one piece that really struck a chord with me because Clint Dempsey's been given the number 2 jersey at Spurs.
Oh, yeah.
Odd. Very, very weird.
On numbers of players wearing how wrong it is at the moment. That's quite interesting, actually, yeah.
And that's by Max
Grieve.
Max Grieve, yeah. So have a definitely
bloody
have
good
a
rep.
Bloody good rep. Jim?
Got a little plug all for myself as well. I'm doing a showcase of my Edinburgh show in London at the Soho Theatre, which is on the 25th of September. So if you want to come along, I'll be doing half an hour and there'll be some great new acts as well. That's Soho Theatre. Go to their website. You can get tickets for that 25th of September.
Booyah. That's it. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We've been the Football Ramble since year dot.
This is from George Young.
Hey, George.
And his email address is Mr.
You can't do that.
What?
You can't put his email address on the fucking show.
Why not? My email address is on the internet.
No, you can't do that.
Oh, fair enough.
Come on.
I'm used to giving everyone my email address.
I thought we were going to get all the way through.
Sorry, boys.
No worries.
That's a genuine mistake.
Give his phone number out, though.
Yeah. I haven't got it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.